Welcome to Jam Live, the show featuring concerts and events presented by Junction Arts and Music Society in Haines Junction, Yukon. I am Maria Leniak. Since 2003, the Kluane Mountain Bluegrass Festival has been bringing together some of the finest artists of bluegrass. Amazing musicians such as James King, Michael Cleveland, and the Gibson Brothers. And this year, for the first time, Jam Live recorded some of the rousing performances to share with you on this radio show. As in most musical genres, bluegrass is colored by the musicians' personal and professional lives. And we invite you to come along with us as we explore some of their behind-the-scenes background. Steve Gedrose, past producer of the Bluegrass Festival, was the apt choice to chat with members from each of the five bands that Jam Live is featuring from this year's festival. In this segment of our show, Steve is speaking with three members of the five-member band, Jeff Scroggins and Colorado. The band is from, you guessed it, Colorado. Jeff Scroggins and Colorado is a band that believes in creating an enjoyable and intriguing musical experience for their audiences. These musicians push the boundaries of bluegrass music while honoring the traditions and cultural heritage of the pieces. Now we invite you to sit back and enjoy the following conversations with Jeff, his son Tristan Scroggins, and Greg Blake. These chats were recorded at the festival on June 14, 2015, at the delightfully crowded St. Elias Convention Center in Haines Junction, Yukon.
Hi, my name's Steve Gedrose. We're here from the 2015 Kluane Mountain Bluegrass Festival here in downtown Haines Junction, Yukon. I'm here with some members of Jeff Scroggins in Colorado. Thanks for coming out, you guys. I really appreciate you talking to me.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks for having us.
Let's just run through the members of the band. Maybe, Tristan, maybe you can tell us who all is in the band. I know you're on mandolin and vocals.
Yeah, play mandolin and sing, and then my dad's the namesake of the band, Jeff Scroggins. He plays the banjo.
Banjo, of course.
And we got a great singer and guitar player, Greg Blake, making us look good.
Yeah, okay, yeah. And then we got Sebby Denson on the bass.
Yeah, CB.
CB, I'm sorry,
that's
okay,
right.
CB. And Ellie Hawkinson on the fiddle.
That's
and
right.
And vocals.
Yeah.
Great. Okay, maybe we can just start by asking everybody how they came to play bluegrass. I kind of get it for you, but yeah. How about you guys? And maybe a little bit about your influences that got you going on this music early on.
Well, I didn't start playing bluegrass when I was young. I bought a banjo when I was 20. I started playing electric guitar. I was like a rock and roll guitar player when I was a teenager. But I always liked the sound of the banjo, and I liked bluegrass when I'd hear it, but I didn't really know what it was.
Sure.
So I eventually bought a banjo, and I just started finding out more and more about it, and pretty soon I sold my electric guitars and bought a better banjo and sort of took over my life, and I've been doing it. You know, ever since then, you know, it's really all I do. I mean, I'm not much of a guitar player anymore, but anyway, that's how I got started. It was definitely kind of backed into it. I saw the Newgrass Revival play in 1983, and that was like a huge, thing, sort of mixing bluegrass and rock and roll, and it was like really kind of pulled me in. And then the longer I stuck with it, the more I sort of worked my way back to J.D. Crowe and Earl Scruggs and Don Reno, and I just spent a lifetime now just sort of exploring all the different little corners, and trying learning about it. But anyway,
yeah.
that's how I got to it.
Great. How about you, Greg?
Well, I was born and raised in West Virginia.
Yes.
And of course, a lot of great music back in that part of the United States.
Absolutely.
And I grew up listening to classic country music.
Okay.
Johnny Cash, Merle Haggard, George Jones, Buck Owens, and Roy Clark. All of those. And I've been singing as long as I can remember. And I got my first guitar at age 7, basically just to accompany myself singing.
Okay.
And then I got hooked up with a couple boys my age in the neighborhood, and they introduced me to bluegrass.
Okay.
And let me listen to a bunch of their records and their dad's records, and their dad happened to also be a banjo player in a bluegrass band.
Okay.
At one point.
Right.
And So I would go over early of a morning in the day and help them with their chores so we could have an extra hour or two to pick.
Okay, great, great. So do you come from a musical family? Was
not
that a big
no,
deal?
Not at all. There are no musicians whatsoever in my immediate family.
Is that so?
Yeah, but my folks were very encouraging with my hobby and my desire to make music. And never discouraged me in any way in that regard. So,
right.
So that's kind of how I was probably 11 or 12, I would imagine, when I made that discovery of bluegrass as opposed to my country influences.
Okay, was gospel ever in there?
Oh yeah, a lot. It's because actually the two boys that I came in contact with, their father was a preacher.
Okay.
And so I went to their church, and they would incorporate banjos, guitars, mandolins, fiddles, upright bass in the worship service.
Oh, I see.
To accompany the congregational singing instead of a piano or an organ.
Of course, yeah, yeah. So. Okay. And Tristan, I guess, was there any doubt that you would ever play music? I mean, this has always been part of your life.
Well, music certainly has, but I never played when I was a little kid. Other than that. That fly swatter that one time.
Yeah, I hear you got some mean licks on a fly swatter.
No, my dad never asked or expected or even assumed that we'd play music, me or my brother and sister.
Right.
I think I was playing baseball when I asked Dad if he'd teach me how to play the banjo.
Right.
I was pretty bad at the banjo.
But that was the first instrument that kind of got your attention?
Yeah.
You heard it around the house and stuff?
Yeah. Well, I'd heard it forever. I was just, one day, something clicked a little different, and I heard it differently, and I really wanted, I was eight at the time, so
right.
I never experienced, wanting to do something for real.
Before. Yeah, of course. I get that, sure.
So I wanted to learn how to play the banjo, and I wasn't good, and about a year later, I found a mandolin, and that was a lot easier, and then... Yeah, since then, it's never been a question of whether or not I'd play music. It was just, when the next time was.
Right.
And how I could make those gaps shorter.
Right, right. So baseball kind of fell by the wayside?
Yeah, well, I wasn't much of a baseball player.
It turns out you're a good picker, so I think you made a great choice there. Let's see... Greg, I know you and Jeff are both involved with teaching. They always say if you want to learn something, teach it. Has that been your experience? Has that been helpful in your own learning?
Oh, my God, yeah. I started teaching fairly early on because people would ask you, to do that. And I never felt like I was, very good at it, because I wasn't probably, but doing it, eventually after a certain point of getting reasonably well known as a banjo player, I started getting asked to do camps and workshops and things, and I sort of learned as I went on that. And the last 5 years, I taught at a place called Swallow Hill, which is a music school, very cool folk music school in Denver, and that was a new experience is teaching mostly adults who've never played an instrument of any sort before. So that was quite an education for me.
I
learned a lot about what I do by having to explain it so thoughtfully and carefully. It's like when you have to really explain something like that. Yeah, it's like that's when you do learn a lot.
Of course, and people take that information so differently, right? You got to understand how they learn.
Right, yeah, exactly. You learn. Teaching is the ultimate learning experience. You learn that people all learn differently, and you have to learn to sort of have a big bag of tricks to do that.
Right, right. Has that been your experience too, Greg?
Oh, absolutely. And then I also, for many years, have taught in a different context.
Okay.
As well. I actually am kind of making a shift in my career right now. For 30 years, I've been involved in the ministry.
Okay.
And music has just been kind of something complimentary and and subsidiary.
Okay.
But now we're making that shift to where, you know, the music is full time.
Right.
And so in those years of being in the ministry, one of my one of the aspects of that is I actually taught at college level.
I see.
And I taught philosophy and ethics.
Okay.
And so I've been involved in teaching for probably 20 years.
Okay.
And so you know, some of that applies, of course, you know teaching methodologies and so forth, but still I mean, you couldn't have said it any better. I mean, if you want to learn something, then teach it.
Yeah, because I gather you just learned to sing just by doing it, right?
Right.
I mean, exactly. You had no formal lessons or things when
I never had any formal lessons. Once I got into college, the choir teacher heard me performing somewhere one time and rooked me into, you know, being in the choir, and that's the first place that I ever actually learned how to read.
Okay.
You know, a musical line.
Right. Okay.
Because I've always played and sung by ear.
Sure. Sure.
And then after that, you know, then I went from the choir to a small male quartet ensemble, and
right.
And actually traveled with that some for about 3 years.
Okay.
But no, really no vocal training of any kind.
Right. But now you teach people how to sing.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
And guitar, do you teach guitar as
well?
Yeah,
matter of fact, I just did a workshop this morning, a guitar workshop.
Okay, great. Well, now that we're talking about your UConn experience, tell me about the Woodshed UConn Acoustic Music Camp. How was that experience for you guys?
It was just absolutely incredible. I mean, just welcomed us with open arms, took such great care of us. The students were, fabulous. I mean,
they're keen, aren't they?
Yes, they most certainly are. Mm-hmm. And I thought they organized it really well. It's just, I think it's a great camp. They've got a great handle on what a camp and learning experience ought to be.
It's a lovely spot out there, too. That doesn't hurt.
That doesn't hurt a bit.
How about you, Jeff? Was that your experience, too?
Yeah, it was. We do more and more of those camps. We teach a lot at these things. And interestingly, mostly in Canada, it seems. We've had a bigger and bigger following. Yeah, the BC and Alberta are two of our stronger areas for people, you know, for fans. And so, yeah, we do a lot of work each summer so far up here. And absolutely, this camp, to me, it's small, but it was one of the best-run camps, I think. I mean, the pacing was nice. The people were amazing. I mean, there were doctors, there were all kinds of professionals, you know, just amazing people. I mean, that's my experience in general with these things. It's just like, it's one of the coolest little side parts of our job here is you just meet, like, the most amazing people everywhere you go. But the UConn, for me, I mean, the Sundog was, like, it was definitely special. I mean, it was, I like the people up here.
Great.
Like, nice sort of free spirit, open-minded sort of thing. Very nice.
Yeah, don't tell anybody, because we don't want anybody moving over, you know what I mean? I mean, you're welcome, of course.
Well, thank you.
Now, Tristan, how about your learning? Were you self-taught, or do you have books and things, or how did that come around?
I did have a lot of books, and that was probably the biggest thing for me. I had a lot of books on mandolin stuff. I took some lessons from a couple of people in New Mexico. I grew up in New Mexico.
Okay.
And there's not a ton of bluegrass there.
I bet not.
No. But I took some lessons, and I was really fortunate to get to follow Dad around to places and meet his friends who are all really good. But I just listened to bluegrass a lot and listened to music and just really liked it and worked on it a lot.
Yeah, there's so many resources online and stuff now. I mean, yeah. I think the kids now have a real good hand. I mean, YouTube clips of historic concerts, there are all kinds of ways to learn now. Before, it used to be you put a dime on the cartridge to slow the record down so you could get the licks, you know.
Yeah,
that's good.
I did that.
Did you? Of course. And the pitch is wrong and all
exactly,
that.
Exactly, yeah.
Yes. Yeah, well, that's great. Now, I know that you guys have two recordings, the self-titled debut and then Western Branches from 2013, is that correct?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I really, Jeff, I was going to ask you about the cover on Western Branches. I really love that cover. Can you talk about the artist? It must be somebody you know.
Absolutely, yeah. He's a wonderful fellow down in New Mexico. William Rotzart is his name. I think he moved there from Belgium, actually.
Oh, I see. Okay, so he's European trained.
Right. Yeah. He's a commercial artist there, and he does a lot of posters and things. And there's a Santa Fe Bluegrass Festival, and he does the posters for that. And they were always like so amazingly cool. And so I'd met him over the years there. He can play some music too.
Okay.
And he's just an amazing fellow. Yeah, you can check him out online. You know, he's got a lot of cool stuff. And so we were looking for that. We recorded it down in the mountains of New Mexico, just outside of Santa Fe.
Okay.
And we wanted to have sort of a southwestern feel to it. And we saw that, and it was like definitely fit the bill. But yeah, so he was very kind and generous. I mean, I have the painting like sitting in my living room, you know.
Oh, do you? Okay, the original. So the painting already existed when he hadn't heard the music and it kind of worked the other
way. Yeah, interestingly, for the new CD that we just did, he did a painting for that as well. And it's very different, but it's sort of an abstract picture of the guitar and banjo and mandolin it's very different, but it's also very striking, you know. So
yes.
It's like, you know, yeah, I'm pretty lucky to have a guy who's willing to basically just donate his artwork for our cause.
That's indeed really terrific. I used to have a CD shop in Whitehorse, and I know how important in those days, anyway, that's maybe not the case anymore, but the cover is what really sometimes turned people on to music, right? I mean, that's to have that beautiful image really draws people in.
Right. Yeah.
Now, I know that you guys did a crowdfunding campaign for this new record. Maybe you can talk about that experience a little bit.
Well, we could have run it better, but it's just kind of been a blur for the last 6 months. I mean, we recorded the CD in February and late January, early February. We spent the month of January like juggling things around and recording it, and then recorded it. And then we immediately, like, sort of, this went off on a pretty heavy, we've been working a lot, so, yeah. So yeah, the crowdfunding thing, I mean, it's very cool, I mean, that all of our, you know, friends and, you know, people were so generous and supportive. We spent a lot more on this CD. I mean, we've got to recoup a lot of money now. We spent a lot of money on this CD. We went out to Nashville and recorded it with a friend, Bill Vorndick, who just won his 10th Grammy this year for Bluegrass Album of the Year with Jerry Douglas's Earls of Leicester thing. But yeah, he's recorded Bela Fleck and New Grass Revival, Alison Krauss, and everybody. He's recorded everybody.
He's the recording engineer?
He was the engineer and producer on this project. And he's recorded some of all the music that was like seminal in our, you know, a lot of music that was very seminal in our own, like, you know, like musical like backgrounds. And I met him. I recorded on a couple of projects with him back in the 90s, and then we ran into him in Nashville, and I started talking to him about recording the CD. And it was very exciting to work with him because he's a genius.
He really is.
And he's also to hear.
Is it his studio as well?
Yeah, he. When I first worked with him, he had a studio down on Music Row in Nashville, but now he bought the old is it Elks Lodge or something?
Moose Lodge.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Outside of Nashville, it's for all the old musicians. Like, you know, Davidson County is a dry county, so they all used to go out to this Moose Lodge out in the middle of nowhere on the top of a hill, and drink,
right.
And party.
Okay.
And so he bought the place, and there's a house above it, and then, like, there's actually the basement's the studio, and behind the studio there's a big, you know, dance floor and stage, sort of like a mausoleum. It's like a mausoleum. It's like a ghost, you know, full of ghosts of all the old people. But, it's a very cool space. It was very cool doing that. And, he's probably, I think at one time he was, he still is one of the top, Pete, I mean, he sort of helped form the modern sound of bluegrass, so, you know, it's very cool to work with him.
Wow, great. Now, I know that on Western Branches you have you guys have written some tunes. You have a Graham Parsons tune. Mm-hmm. You have Gordon Lightfoot, Grandpa Jones. So maybe you can talk about your process of choosing material. Tristan, you want to weigh in on that a little bit?
Oh, sure. Well, with his last album, we kind of tried to focus more on, at least with me, Dad, and Greg, what the combination of our musical perspectives were and what sound that created, and then trying to find songs that were interesting that other people hadn't really heard before in this context through that point of view.
Okay.
And they kind of all ended up being kind of sad.
That's a bluegrass thing, isn't it?
Yeah, seems like it.
I think we were trying to not do that, but I ended up picking a lot of ones of the songs, and I really like sad songs. But I mean, we really love all those people. We on this album, we have more Gordon Lightfoot because we love Gordon Lightfoot. We have Jimmy
Nelson.
Webb.
Okay.
There. Who's that?
Willie Nelson.
Nelson. Don Reno.
Yeah.
I think Jeff talked about that the other night, that it's a lot of sad lyrics but really happy music, so keeps everybody happy, I guess. So do you just come into the studio with a whole ton of tunes, or have you kind of whittled them down, or what's that process like?
Well, we would have liked to have had more time and had a bigger pile of songs, but we ended up basically just going in with what we got just enough stuff prepared to do a CD. But yeah, we had a larger list at one time, but then we worked up, you know, 12 of them, and had a few more sort of in the wings. But by the time we got there, we had it pretty figured out what we were going to do. You know, so and that's good. I mean, you know, when you're going into the studio, you need to sort of. You're paying a lot of money by the hour, so you got to really
get pretty organized
about it.
So, are these all road tested things? Like these are songs that you had in your sets?
some of them, a few of them were things we had been doing, but the biggest majority of them were things that we hadn't done, and we started doing them. You know, I mean, some of them we still even haven't worked up, but it's all this dream list of things. I mean, I grew up being a really huge Gordon Lightfoot fan, and I guess I got that somehow, and Greg seems to have got it. So we've pretty much always recorded like a Gordon Lightfoot song on everything, I think. And we like the Country Gentlemen a lot, so we recorded a few of their things that they had recorded, we re-recorded. It's funny. I used to, when I first started doing this, I felt like very progressive because I would had all these non-bluegrass influences, and you know. But it's like these days, everybody, most people have some of that. I mean, Front Country here is a pretty progressive.
Are they ever?
Band with a lot of different influences, and we're probably a little more traditional. But I mean, I grew up listening, and you know, and continue to listen to a lot of other music and have a lot of influences and. And yeah, I mean, I'm always looking for tunes that could cross over into bluegrass and make a nice bluegrass tune.
Yeah. So how about arrangements? Is that just kind of an organic process? Everybody just comes up with their part, or how does that all come?
Well, the three of us primarily are kind of the core there, as far as probably 90% of the arrangements of any of the songs that we do come right out of this core of three.
Okay.
Because we'll even suggest to, a bass player or a fiddle player, this is kind of what we're hearing, and then you do with it what may work your magic.
Okay, right, okay. But you kind of have some general idea of what you're hearing. Okay.
Now, the cool thing about it is, and I just came out with a solo CD right before our new band project.
That's released now?
The official release is going to be in October.
Okay.
And I had Mark Schatz on the bass.
Mark Schatz has been here a couple of times.
Yeah.
I know him very well. What an amazing player that guy is.
Exactly. And so we had him also on our band CD.
Oh,
as
he
well.
Did? Okay.
And, we've been kind of looking for a new bass player. CB's filling in. We got different people filling in here and there, but yeah, we were sort of like looking for that new person. But in the meantime, Mark Schatz was a pretty good stand-in.
Guy, you think he'll do?
And he proved, and he proved to be the same kind of kind of default assistant producer.
Okay.
Because he comes into the studio with a lot of great ideas. He's got, the phrase, he's got such big ears.
Yes.
I mean, he just hears what's going on, and he says, here, let's try this.
Okay.
And,
he definitely had some significant influence. I mean, Bill helped arrange it. We had arrangements, loosely pretty, figured out. But,
sure.
But definitely both people added a lot. Mark is great that way. He's really got a lot of good ideas in the studio.
Yep, sure.
And he's all about the groove, that man.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. See, most certainly is. It's so easy to play, with him there.
Yeah, yeah, great. Was he doing any claw hammer, or was he just on bass?
He did play banjo on your CD.
Yeah, he played banjo on one cut of my CD, just bass on our band CD.
Yeah, great. Yeah, what a entertaining guy. I know that you guys have all won numerous awards for your performance and Tristan as well. So what does that mean to you? Is that something you go after, or just nice if it happens, or how do you feel about that?
Well, when I was a kid, I definitely, I'd go to contests a lot with the intent of trying to win.
Of course.
And nowadays, if I enter a contest, it's usually more just for fun.
Okay.
Just to fool around and see what happens, which if I actually worked on it, maybe I'd win a couple more of these. And the awards and stuff is always just nice. It's nice to be, to get some sort of validation for the work you do, but it's not necessarily something I, it's nice if it happens,
right.
I suppose.
Now talk to me about the competitions you've been in. Are there set pieces you have to play, or how does that go?
No, for mandolin contests, they're all kind of just simplified versions of fiddle contests, which is a real big tradition down there, so... With the mandolin contest, it's usually you play just any two songs.
Okay.
You just can't talk on stage. And hopefully it's blind judging, so they can't see who's playing.
Oh, is that how they do it? Okay, I know they do that in violin, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, that's pretty neat. And Jeff, you've won awards, and what does that mean to you? Is that validate what you're doing, or...?
Well, I think it certainly did initially, I went to Winfield, Kansas in 1983 to the festival there, which is where they hold the National Flat Picking Guitar Championship.
And as a
continuance of that, they sort of added all the other instruments in. There's a lot of contests there, including a National Bluegrass Banjo Championship. And so I saw that in 1983, and it was very inspiring. I decided to try and win it, and so 6 years later, I did.
Right.
It was a lot of long hours of work to do it.
No doubt.
The competition at those things is insane. So,
is that right? Oh, yeah. A lot of good pickers.
And people come from all over the world to do it.
Wow.
Winning, it's great. It's great to have that sort of peer recognition for sure. It helps make you feel like you're on the right track, whatever, with all of that. But for me, it honestly was it loosely translated into, I really wasn't necessarily looking to have this band be, my band. I used my name as part of the band, partly because after you win Winfield, people know who you are.
Recognition,
and
of course.
So when we started the band, I thought it would be a good way to get work.
Sense to me.
At least it was something that people would go, oh yeah, I know who that guy is,
You must have an okay band.
Yeah, that sort of thing.
Okay.
So it's like it helped me to build a reputation and name recognition. And
yes.
So that was the best part of it for me, really, I think.
Great. How about you, Greg?
Yeah, well, absolutely. The awards definitely mean something, especially when they come from a body of your peers,
yes,
and the fans.
Yes.
And then there's both Tristan and Jeff have used the term valid, and you, validation. I mean, there's that validation, confirmation, you know, we like what you're doing.
Yes.
And that's what we strive for. That's the bottom line. It's other than just our sheer personal enjoyment.
Yeah. You know? It's all about the glory.
Right? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, we enjoy picking, and especially picking with one another.
Of course.
But, you know, when you can do it and you're having fun with it, you know, making a lot of money, tens of dollars,
well over a year. That's my understanding. Yeah.
And but then, you know, when the people are enjoying it, I mean, because then you've reached your objectives.
Right. That's what it's all about.
Yeah, so you're having fun, you're enjoying it, the people are enjoying it. You know, the only other thing you could add on to it are mansions and boats and airplanes.
Yeah. Well, that kind of brings me to why do you guys feel that bluegrass, I don't know if it's a resurgence exactly, but why is it so popular in this high-tech, you know, gadget driven digital world? What do you think, Tristan?
I've only been around in that world, but
of course, that's why I ask you. Yeah.
I don't know, it's still pretty, it's kind of a counterculture almost still. It's maybe just more popular than people might expect, but you know, I went to a really big high school, and
right.
There was 4,000 kids there.
And oh my gosh!
In that time, I maybe met five that really knew what bluegrass was at all.
I was going to ask you that. Yeah,
it's still only like pretty progressive stuff. But at the same time, I mean, obviously, I meet a lot of young people who are really into it.
Yeah,
I think it did for me. It just really, something about the sound really spoke to me just personally.
Okay.
And, it seems that I've talked to a lot of people. There was a very specific moment where my life, well, two specific moments where my life changed because of the sound of bluegrass. And I've talked to a lot of other people, and they have very similar experiences where when they hear it for the first time or something clicks and their life just changes forever. And so it seems like it's not that it's perhaps more surprising that it's as popular as it is, but I don't think it's, I think it'll always continue to be popular, there will always be a contingency, and it'll fluctuate within those time periods.
Yeah. How about you guys? How about you, Jeff?
Well, yeah, maybe we have a slightly larger and different perspective. I mean, Tristan having been involved with it his whole life, practically, but, certainly it's like one of the things that has continued to help it have resurgence has been movies. You know, I mean, Bonnie and Clyde in 19 is that 67, I think.
Yeah, Flatten Scruggs. Yeah,
yeah, that was a pretty big. I mean, that ended up. I mean, I think Foggy Mountain Breakdown was a number one hit on country radio.
I think you're right.
So?
I think you're right.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, you know, and Flatten Scruggs surprisingly had like several number one hits. I mean, two, at least that one and one more.
Beverly Hillbillies.
Was a number one country hit.
Amazing.
Deliver the Movie, you know, Deliverance.
But that was the first one of 67. Deliverance was either 73 or 4.
Right.
And that was also, you know, I mean, talk about your dark movies, but
no kidding.
but the music, you know. The music, it helped, and then, you know, Oh Brother Where Art Thou, of course, is like probably the biggest one of all, and that's now been 11 or 12 years
that's
ago,
right.
I think.
At least.
But it's continued. I think a lot of what you see, the current trend, has been tied to that, and Alison Krauss, you know, being a part of that, and also crossing over into country. I mean, you know, Alison Krauss did a lot of work for bringing a lot of people into our world, for sure. You know, I see all of that, but I still, I mean, like, that's sort of not exactly the answer to your question, because I think for me, it's just like what Tristan started talking about is what happened for me, and I think for most people, that it resonates with some people. It's a sound it's a very compelling music, I think.
You know,
it's like, and some people, you know, it just hits them and has no effect on them. But for the people who are tuned into it, they become sort of fanatically devoted to it. It's a very interesting thing how devoted the people are. And then I also, you know, in a place like this in Colorado, and it's turned in, you know, in our state, you know, people, it's just sort of the hippie music, you know, it's the background for a lot of hippie life, you know.
I was going to ask you about that. This seems super popular in Colorado.
Yeah, it's like there's a huge music scene there, and it's like sort of, you know, I mean, we're not directly tied into that because it's actually a lot more progressive and diverse than what, I mean, we're still a pretty traditional band, but we do like dabble with the, you know, that scene a little bit. But yeah, I mean, it's become like, you know, it is like a pretty substantial part of the Colorado culture. And I think in a place like this, you know, where there is, you know, per capita or percentage wise, there's a lot of live music because, you know, you're going to be in a place this remote. It's like, you know, you kind of need stuff like that.
Gotta make your own entertainment.
Right, you know, and it's like that was another aspect for me of it as I started doing this. I was like, I grew up on a farm around people who played, and not bluegrass, but you know, country music, and I grew up around people playing music, and so I started wanting to play. I was listening to the radio and listening to rock and roll, but it was like, part of my deal of getting into the banjo was just sort of a Mother Earth News, Back to the Land, sort of like hippie thing in the late 60s, early 70s. And, you know, it was kind of this, yeah, it's just like make your own, you know, grow your own food, make your own stuff, and play your own music,
own,
you know.
Yes.
And I think that's a really still a good idea, you know. I mean,
of course it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course. And that, I know it's kind of off topic for that, but I know that you guys stream your music. I listen to some of your stuff on Reverb Nation and SoundCloud. How do you feel about audio streaming sites? There's a lot of controversy about artists not getting compensated for that stuff, but how do you guys look at that? Because you take part in that to a certain degree, it sounds like.
Yeah. Well, I'll go ahead and, you know, pitch in my 2 cents worth on that. I mean, I feel it's almost a necessity. It's kind of almost like when I go to Kinko's or or Staples or someplace like that, some office supply store, and purchase business cards.
Right.
I mean, I've got to invest something in that in order to make the connections that I need in networking. And I almost feel like that's kind of like your online business card.
Okay, yeah.
The whole streaming thing.
I mean,
you know, yeah, granted, I know there's a lot of, I mean, and it can be a rather hostile discussion in some contexts.
Absolutely. That's kind of why I bring it up.
Yeah. but, you know, but like I said, we're making so much money, it just doesn't, doesn't matter to us.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting you talk about the business card, because another band told me, you know, you got to pay for advertising, and that's how they look at it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's a pretty healthy attitude, I think.
I mean, it seems like there have been a few bands. I was trying to think, was it one of those big rock bands from the 80s, like really fighting, you know, not having their stuff.
That's right.
You know, but it's like, I think that you're just like trying to sweep back the tide with a broom, you know? I
mean, yeah.
It's like, it's going to happen, and you just got to like look at the changing landscape and figure out how you're going to make a living out of it. I mean, obviously we want to get as much, you know, money out of what we do as we can, because God knows you need it when you do this. And it's like, it's a pretty modest lifestyle. We don't make much money,
of course.
But I mean, I can't spend time worrying about it too much. I mean, I think we just got to do what's right. Do it for the music's sake, and hopefully, you know, the universe will take care of you.
Right. Well, right. And I, you know, some of these sites I check out, they say, you know, if you're listening to something, then there'll be a list. If you like these guys, you might also like these other bands. So maybe somebody will be turned on that wasn't aware of your group. Or
absolutely.
Yeah, I think that's, I mean, it all kind of just evens out. I mean, you're going to, you know, you're not getting, I mean, I do find, like, the whole, you know, corporate aspect of it, you know, is that somebody's making money off of it. It's not you, is a little annoying, but
you as the creator, isn't that right?
But it's just too much life to live out there to like worry about it for me.
That's a great way to think about it, I think.
Yeah.
I was also going to ask about, I just love your logo, which is bluegrass with altitude. Now you guys must feel right at home right here in the in the mountains, huh?
Yeah, sure do. For sure, yeah. This is, I mean that, it's, you know, it's something I don't talk about often because there's no real reason. You know, nobody's usually asking me questions, but it's like that was a combination of things. I mean, I when I was a kid, I grew up in Oklahoma, which is, you know, it's, you can see all the way across the state. You know?
Right, it's pretty.
If you stay on a chair, you can see on both borders.
Yeah.
But you know, yeah, it's a pretty flat land sort of place, and you know, my grandparents took me on vacation into the Ozarks, which is just a low range of mountains in Missouri and Arkansas. And,
yes.
And there's also a lot of this kind of music there, and that's kind of one of the first places I fell in love with the music and the mountains. And my life ever since then is like from a child. I mean, I always wanted to live in a place where it was mountainous, and I ended up in Colorado. I lived in New Mexico for a while in Colorado, and so yeah, it's like I do tie this music loosely in my mind to the mountains, even though, I mean, it's more of Appalachia, but it's like, you think that there's just like a spirit of people that, like, that a sort of spirit that's common to this place and to Colorado and to, like, you know, the backcountry of Appalachia, where it's just like a sort of self-sufficient, you know, do-it-yourself sort of thing and sort of a free-spirited thing. I just think it's music that suits mountains very well. I don't know. I mean, like, the people who are attracted to mountains, I mean, there seems to be a correlation. It's completely anecdotal because there's no, I mean, nothing scientific. But
of course.
Yeah. It seems like it does well in places like this, you know.
Yeah, that's interesting, I think. I went to a classical music concert one time with Yo-Yo Ma, and he was working with a Chinese composer, and the Chinese guy was talking about inflections in the language, and he said in the flat country in China, the language is kind of flat, but in the mountainous areas, there's a lot more inflection in the voice, and I thought, wow, I never made that correlation before, but I think that translates to music and all kinds of other things, attitudes people have.
Yeah, it's funny how I think that those kind of things are more true than you. If you don't think about it, you don't really see it. But I see the same thing. I mean, I think it's something about people who are attracted to. I mean, there's people who see mountains and they're attracted immediately. Like, same for me. I mean, like, that's that, and the same with the bluegrass. I mean, I hear it, and it's like compelling thing. Both things are very compelling, and I wouldn't want my life to be without them. And I think that people there's people. When I lived in Kansas for a year or two, and yeah, the people are very, you know, what's the American Gothic, the picture?
Yes.
It's like, they're very stoic, you know, for the most part.
I went to college in Indiana. Yeah. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, they're very stoic, and like, you know, I mean,
which is good, right?
I mean, yeah, it's like, there's nothing wrong with that, yeah, but it's like, my motto has, like, one of my ex-bandmates told me that my motto in life should be, anything that's worth doing is worth overdoing. And,
yes.
So yeah, I mean, that's kind of been. You know, I mean, I am that kind of like. I like excess. I like extreme things. I like, you know, playing. I mean, and bluegrass is kind of an extreme music in a sense. I mean, it's like, you know, so fast and you know, and it's like the mountains for me are like that too. It's just like, it's very compelling.
I read this quote somewhere that said, if you're not on the edge, you're taking up too much room.
yeah, that's great. I mean, and that's how I always felt. I mean, you know, when we come to these things and, like, stay up until 5 or 6 like we did every night, I mean, I haven't slept hardly any this whole time we've been here.
I gather that, yeah.
But it's like, yeah, Casey Groves used to say that, he used to call it FOMS, which is fear of missing something. So,
yes.
But I'm here, you know.
Yes.
I just want to take in every second of every, you know, I want to experience everything. And I think there are a lot of people who are sensible and go to bed, you know, at the same time every night, and they eat their meals at the same time every day, and they stay in the same place all the time, and that's there's nothing wrong. It's just different choices. Maybe they're even, you know, maybe they've got it figured out, but
not necessarily.
It's like they may not live longer, but it's going to seem like it was longer. but yeah, I find myself just the opposite, just always looking for the next cool experience. Something like seeing something like this is just, you know, certainly a highlight of my life.
I mean, that's great. Incredible. I'm really glad to hear that, because we're so happy to have you guys here. What have you got coming up? Where are you heading after this? What's happening this summer?
Well, actually, Monday evening, we have a Monday evening concert in Vancouver, B.C.
Oh, okay.
The Pacific Bluegrass and Heritage Society has
great.
A monthly concert series that
great.
They've contracted us to come and play.
Have you been before?
We've been to Vancouver a couple of different times.
Yeah.
We've been to also to Victoria and other places on the island.
Okay.
As well. And then also more inland in B.C. as well. We love British Columbia.
It's a beautiful province,
yeah.
isn't it? It's got everything going on pretty
yeah,
much.
Yeah, exactly. And then from there we go to Wenatchee, Washington.
Okay.
We go back into the States.
Right.
We go home after that long enough to do laundry and then get back out on the road.
Okay. Is that right? In Colorado? Or?
We're actually kind of doing a little different stuff
okay.
for the latter part of this month. And then we come back together again in the first part of July. Then we travel east to North Carolina.
Okay.
And do the Red, White, and Bluegrass Festival over July 4th weekend.
Okay.
Big festival there. We're really looking forward to getting, we're gaining a little bit more momentum each and every time into the east, you know, because that, for a Western band, that's a hard
nut to crack, yeah. isn't it? Yes, sir.
And, but stopping on the way, this has been on my bucket list, definitely as a musician. Stopping on the way to North Carolina, we're going to stop in Nashville and play at the Station Inn.
Oh, my gosh.
So.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so we'll do that. And then there's other festivals in July. We'll be in Iowa after the North Carolina weekend. Then we'll be in Colby, Kansas the following weekend.
The American Gothic Tour.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
And then,
a lot of driving.
Yeah, and then after that, we'll be in the back out west in Columbia Gorge.
Okay.
And then I have to make a hustle trip back to Colorado and do a Sunday morning show there at Rocky Grass.
Okay.
August, we've got a ton of stuff as well. A tour out kind of those, I don't know what you call that area right there, the Montana and Wyoming and...
Northern Rockies.
Yeah,
Big
Northern
Sky
Rockies.
Country.
Yeah, Big Sky Country, exactly.
Yeah.
And then we come all the way back out east, and we've got a festival in late August in the Finger Lakes area in New York.
Oh, wow.
And then hop a plane back to British Columbia, and then we'll be teaching for a week in British Columbia.
Okay.
And so that takes us about up to September, and there's stuff in September that we're doing. We're going to IBMA.
Excellent.
In the latter part of September.
Uh-huh.
So,
to showcase there, or...?
We showcased there last year as a band, and then I was fortunate enough to be invited back to showcase the new CD, my solo CD.
Great.
But we're going to be there as a band, of course, as well. We've already got some showcases lined up, some of the private showcases.
Yeah.
And then, just, you know, living the life.
Yeah. So do you guys do your own booking and stuff, or you handle
all
that? We do,
yeah. Jeff and I handle all the booking.
Okay. Which is a whole other... ball game, isn't it?
Whole other beast.
Yeah, yeah. Well, great. Thanks for that. I was going to ask, what can fans expect to hear from your show? Maybe, Tristan, maybe you can talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, well, we've been working a lot lately to definitely start doing things that people haven't heard before, necessarily.
Tunes, you mean, or...?
Well, tunes, I mean, Dad and I write a lot of tunes.
Yes.
We certainly write some odd ones, but
yeah.
more just back to that musical point of view and perspective. And I think our sound as a band, however you want to define it, it's, in my mind, it's like this third-generation bluegrass-esque sound that combines, like, Greg's, like, really good at singing country songs.
Yes.
And Dad's like the Jimmy Page of the banjo.
Yes.
I really like show tunes.
Okay.
I've done a lot of that.
Okay.
With this new album, you'll definitely hear a little more of that, taking songs that that we enjoy, and redefining them not just as a bluegrass song, but more just expressing the song we want the way we want to.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And they're usually, yeah, they don't. I mean, we put a couple bluegrass songs on that album, but like we definitely just turned a couple of country songs on their heads.
Okay. Yeah. So familiar melodies that people are hearing a new way. Is that kind of the
idea? Yeah. I mean, as far as like, you know, I see a thread sort of the bands that I think we like. We've talked about that from the beginning. The bands we wanted to emulate, and the Country Gentlemen, you know, was a band that was pretty groundbreaking in their time.
Quite right.
You know, but I see our band as in that tradition, and it's the seldom seen. And then my banjo, my teacher was Alan Mundy from the Country Gazette when I was growing up in Oklahoma. He was there. And that band was, I mean, a huge, that West Coast sound had made a pretty big influence on me. But all of those bands to me, like, have this, the common thing of sort of having a fairly traditional vocal sound,
yes,
but like very progressive musical style. And I think that's a lot of what we have. I mean, we're more traditional than like a front country. I mean, they're like really further out, you know, on that cutting edge of like, you know, doing that sort of thing in a way. But it's like, I think we have like just a different approach, basically, you know, but it's more based on traditional. I mean, you kind of work with what you have because Greg's such a good traditional bluegrass, you know, type singer. But I think it's like we mix a lot more progressive ideas and music in, and yeah, it's just like I find it like it is in line with that Country Gentleman, Seldom Seen, Country Gazette stuff that I really liked. That I think there's less and less of now. I mean, there's more.
That's for sure.
You know, yeah. I mean, so I mean that's it's always been. When I started doing this, I said I want it. You know, my goal, even like when I bought that jacket, it was like, what do I want this to be? I want it to be like a, you know, I want it to be like the continuance of like, you know, a hippie bluegrass band from, you know, from the olden and away from 1972, you know, West Coast.
Yes.
I wanted to sound like, you know, have that authentic sound, but just have that, you know, that mixture. That was like very exciting when I kind of worked my way back into that. And for me, it was a very exciting time, all of that, like, you know, mixing of that traditional music, the Birds even, you know.
Of course, with like, Clarence White.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
And so, I mean, like, that's been a huge influence on me and my thinking about how I wanted this to, you know, play out.
Yeah. How about you, Greg? How would you characterize the group?
Well, you know, again, I would love to have a little something for everybody.
Right.
I mean, not that we're, you know, not that we're trying to be a mile wide and only an inch deep.
Right.
But,
yes, I get you.
But we definitely want to be able to, you know, offer almost everybody in the audience something that they can appreciate. And I just think it's cool how we can come together with our different preferences and likes and be able to come to some kind of amalgamation that even though, I mean, Country Gentlemen and the Seldom Seen are strong influences,
yes,
on us. I think it would be cool maybe one of these days where they, you know, they'd say, you know, well, you know, we'd kind of like to do it like, you know, Jeff Scroggins in Colorado, you know,
yes,
how they kind of mix some things together,
okay,
and came up with their own sound.
Okay.
Because that's definitely the point that we're at in the band right now, is that we're honing that what we feel like we want our distinctive sound
to be. Well, I certainly see that you guys are a multi-generational band that would probably appeal to a multi-generational audience. Is that fair to say?
That's sure what we're shooting for.
Yeah, it certainly seems to be the truth. Yeah, I mean, I hadn't initially considered how big of a thing it would be that Tristan and I, you know, were playing. I mean, I didn't think of it when we first started as a family band, and it isn't a family band in the, you know, normally when you think of a family band, you think of a lot of gingham dresses and
you know, absolutely,
and,
right,
and,
yeah,
and, you know, that sort of, you know,
ties
thing.
Yeah,
you know,
that's
it's
right,
like, usually,
yeah,
it's usually like, you know, in our world, a fairly conservative part of the bluegrass experience, but it's like it ended up being, you know, sort of a family band, I guess, in a sense, and being, You know, at the same time, I mean, I think that it's amazing to me how compelling that is to people in the audience. Like, I mean, how much that matters to them. But it's like it's a huge part of this. It's like continually people talking about the musical relationship between Tristan and me. And I didn't know how big that would be, but it is a huge part of this.
Well, that's a happy coincidence, then, I guess. Yeah. Well, I really appreciate you guys' time, and thanks for chatting to me. It really means a lot. Thanks very much.
Oh, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you, Steve.
You've been listening to a conversation between Steve Gedrose and three of the five members of Jeff Scroggins and Colorado. We recorded this event on June 14th at the 2015 Kluane Mountain Bluegrass Festival in Haines Junction, Yukon. If you wish to replay this interview or others that were recorded at this year's festival, check out our website at junctionjam.ca. Just click on the Jam Live link. A heap of thanks to the Yukon Bluegrass Music Society for all their support, and we extend hearty appreciation to Steve Gedrose for preparing and conducting the interview. This show was happily brought to you by Junction Arts and Music. Written and produced by Dieter Gade, and I am Maria Leniak.